In this beginning of Real 3, Talk Mic Real 3, Channel 1 Right. This beginning of Channel 1 Right. Saturday afternoon, rainy day, just rain around, there's so much show on the porch you can't hear. That's coming to the parlor, sitting room, living room.
Yes, that's your right name. That's what I brung up by. Parlor.
Are you down at Dunellen, was that?
No, it's between Dunellen and Williston.
Between Dunellen and Williston?
Mm, a little town that's called Romeo.
Just let it rain.
Just let it rain. Look, we don't have much choice about that, do we?
There
hasn't been any wild turkeys in here in years. They did put out some back over here, south of Leadmouth Lake.
Uh-huh.
Pen-raised turkeys.
Oh, that's been years.
I know. Well, it stayed there, I believe, until the next spring. Jim Lizzie and the rest of them would come up and feed and everything. And that spring, he took two robbers, hen turkeys, and went over there and seen them since.
Well, now, this one, just 100 yards down there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right there close to the driveway, the lane. And I was driving slow. He got in front of me and was running on up there. And then before it got even up close to the house, it took the wings and come way on up almost to the top of the tree.
Well, the three I saw.
It's a crow fly. I'd say it's about 7 miles from here up to over there, that preserve. It is a preserve, I reckon, but it's open to hunters in hunting season.
Yeah.
That's on the, well, it'd be the north side of Orange Lake and goes on out to Rochelle and Lock Loose and back.
Oh,
in.
I know, yeah.
Well, if a turkey was a mind to, he'd come from over there pretty quick.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be that
gentle,
would it?
I don't know about that.
Wouldn't be that gentle?
I don't hardly believe a wild turkey, you don't see them every day. And,
I know,
we live in the little places, and I'll call them summer wild turkeys. The old hen had some small ones. And while I was driving a school bus, she'd see them pretty often up and down the road. And
oh,
good,
that was way back in tiny little boy then.
Mm-hmm.
And my children, that was in the early 1930s, I saw those turkeys.
Uh-huh. From Mr. Boyd's?
No, up past this house on the road, on up Louis Strand on the property now. Oak
tree,
big oak
tree. We was going, my father-in-law and me were butchering a pork up there. And come time for her to go get the children, and she started out and got up there. There's two big oak trees on the right. I don't know whether you've noticed them or not, but all that field there then was growed up in young pine trees. And she blew the horn, and I said, well, she's finding turkeys. And I grabbed a gun and run up there, and there was two, about two-thirds grown. And I shot one of them, and before I could shoot the other, he got behind some palmetto. Well, I went and got one. I just wounded it, but he couldn't go. And I brought it back to her, and she had it up in her armpit. And I went back and looked at that other, and I couldn't, never did see it anymore. Well,
when I just come in that afternoon, there was an old mother turkey and some baby turkeys. And the old mother got out the way because H.M. jumped out of the car and caught one of the little turkeys. And I told him he couldn't raise it. It would be better to turn it loose. And he was just a little boy then.
I finally gave up and started on back to the house and got right on the that old tree, and I don't know why she did, but that old turkey says, just made a noise like that. Well, I had turkey on my mind then, you know, and I just figured maybe it was her. And you know, it took me 2 or 3 minutes to see that thing up in the tree. She was sitting right down on a limb. Looked like she's close as she could get, but she stuck her neck out like that. When she did, I shot her. And I reckon it was illegal. Anyway, I didn't want nobody to see me with him. So I got over the fence and come down through that sapling thicket to the house. And her daddy, he's about finishing up on the hog. When I brought the turkeys in, he quit with the hog and went to picking turkeys. And that was, I wouldn't consider them wild, but they were in the woods making their own living. And
and I've always heard if you had tame turkeys, that wild turkeys would come near enough you could hear them. But I don't believe there's any wild turkeys around, so we finally had to get rid of the gobblers because it got so mean. My granddaughter was out hanging clothes one day, and she's going to university, and she starts spooning with grandma. And the old turkey was just trying to attack the old gobbler. First thing I saw was a rake, and I grabbed it and went out there and had to run him off. He didn't bother us at first, but then later on he got away. He wanted to jump on us. So Big Chuck gave the last one to his nephew.
You've had guineas too.
Yeah.
I've always wanted a few guineas around. They don't bother anything.
Not unless you're farming. I'd have a pea patch, and when those peas got red to yellow, so deep green, they'd go in there and just catch a part of pea pod right on one grain there.
Yeah.
They'd snap it into and get that one grain, that's all they'd get. They'd get them another pod then.
Yeah.
And they raise these old long cantaloupes. At least some people call them muskmelon.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't bother them until they started getting ripe. And when they started getting ripe, like a banana and anything else, they got a smell to them. Them things go.
Oh, they do smell sweet.
Yeah, and they go there and dig a hole in about that big around and get the seed, as many seed as they could. But they wouldn't eat the meat. Well, that just ruined your melon, you know.
Yeah.
Chuck always hated my dinners. I got those from Chicago Hill and Miss Johnson for maybe $1. I can't remember her name now. She married again. But I got the guineas from her, and we were living up at the other place.
I thought it was
my guineas. And when we moved down here, if anything would frighten them in the night, they'd fly on the top of this whole house. And you know, they couldn't catch, and they'd screech coming down. And I thought talked about that today in the middle of the night. Slide down this tin roof.
Yeah.
And they can hide a nest. And you got to be smart to find it. When they go on a nest in the lake, my brother-in-law used to say they cry. They make a peculiar noise when they lay. If you're somewhere close, you go out there, but you really had to look to find it. They had a nest down below my barn one time. And if you put your hand in there, they'll quit it and go and make them another one.
Oh.
And sometime they just blow out a hole in the sand and scratch it out and lay in there. Well, I had me a big spoon. I'd go there and fish out all the eggs with 4 or 5 and leave them.
Yeah.
And one day I went out there and there was 2 quail eggs in there. A quail had come up there and laid in a guinea nest.
Well,
now that's very unusual.
Yeah.
And I had corn and velvet beans down here in that field. And they made nests in there. And I don't believe they've said as much or often as a chicken. But the next year when we was cleaning off the ground, we found old eggshells and where they'd had nests and the eggs deteriorated. And wasn't nothing left in but the hull. And you know, a guinea egg's about twice as hard as a hen egg, the hull.
Oh. They're not quite as big?
No, they're not quite as large yet. We were living up on a little place, one stole a nest back there. That's about the only ones we ever did raise, wasn't it?
I wasn't raising down here, no. I know you hated to hear them fussing all the time.
She'd come up.
So I just had to get rid of
it. With a small one. We knew she was off land. We thought what she was anyway. I don't know much else that hurt except things like that.
And you don't like to hear them rattling?
No.
Pot racking, they call it.
Yeah.
Yes, pot racking.
But they're a good watchdog.
Yeah.
Anything unusual, they'll make a racket.
Yeah.
I think I'd like to have some of you.
No.
You're out of the chicken bit?
Yeah.
You don't even have a rooster?
No. I'm the only rooster around here.
Yeah.
And,
well, you don't crow.
No, I know I'm past crowing.
Well, yes, you do sometimes. You ask Dan.
We used to have chickens and hogs and then a couple of milk cows.
Yeah. All of them had to be fed.
All of them had to be fed. And if you got a milk cow and don't tend to it right, you might as well turn her out of cellar. That was something that I was always particular about. I'd try to milk them about the same time and feed them. Lord, we have had milk to waste, but you can feed the dog or chicken or anything, you know. Make your own homemade butter, and it don't taste like that store-bought butter.
Now, a cow likes to be milked about the same time?
Well, I don't know about liking, but they like to be fed about the same time.
Yeah.
They just regular like anyone else and anything else.
Yeah.
And I had 2 old cows that, especially when the grass is good and the little feed I give them, I would say I'd milk a 10-quart bucket full from a cow. And
mostly from the grass?
Mm-hmm.
There's not much feed, mostly of grass.
Yeah. I'd give them about 4 quarts of dairy feed a day.
Well, that's right, smarter.
All right. And if you got a calf, I always say leave one tit for the calf, you know.
Yeah.
But as soon as I could, I'd always try to do something with the calf. Because there's so much trouble, you got to turn them in. Then if you milk twice a day, you got to separate them at night, you know, or separate them in the morning to keep them away from the mother.
Yeah. They're troublesome. This morning, all I did was change that electric fence over there. Put it up there, farther where there was the rye and the oats had grown way up.
Mm-hmm.
And the cows thought that the oats and that was over for this year. And we let them in there just about noon. And you know, when they got over there, they acted like they was on a fresh pasture.
It was
such a surprise to them that they're going to get it. And you know, there's no comparison the way they look when they stay out there an hour and it is off that grass.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no comparison. Well, they look like they're going to pop.
Yeah. Well, I know, looking at my old cow, he'd go up there on a wet, cold day, and they'd draw it up, and they look terrible.
Yeah.
But when it's nice and warm and everything is normal, they look a whole lot better. Which reminded me, old fella, he was a good man, I liked him, and he had a little orange grove. And he said, the time they used to sell orange, you know, get a buyer and they'd come look at your grove and estimate how many bucks there would be there and buy them in the field. He says, always take a buyer in your grove on a rainy or a dark clouded day. And I asked him why. He said the fruit showed up so better, and the calling of the trees was better and all. But to my way of thinking, it looked like it'd be on a sunshiny day where it was, you could see them better. But that's what he said.
I think so too. Yeah. I noticed these little calves out in the pasture. I've sold them a time or two out there. And in the shade or on a cloudy day, they look a whole lot smaller.
Yeah, I know.
And when they stand there in a good light of some sort, they look a whole lot better.
Yeah.
If you could just manage to get a buyer there when the sun was shining.
When you take them up to the sale and they stand in the pen for 6-8 hours,
yeah,
then run them in the sale ring, they don't look so good.
No.
Have you been up to the Gainesville auction in the office?
No.
Well, over the auction had a desk there, he's got a set of horns, I'd say maybe 3 feet. The load. We're back to our sale. Used to be on this end of town, out there by Adkins' Mill.
Yeah.
And they moved it the other side of town. I don't know why, but I'd a whole lot rather have it on this side because you don't have to go through all that traffic.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I was admiring those. They had them polished up pretty, you know. First time I think I'd been out, the first time I went in the office to get my check, sometime I just let them mail it. And I happened to look around for something, and there were these horns, Texas Longhorn. They was 8 feet and 6 inches from tip to tip. And they were about that large with going on to the head. And I just couldn't hardly believe it. That's the largest ones I'd ever seen. And I went back to the car and told her I had something I wanted to show her. She went and looked at it and she says, I don't believe it. It's unreasonable, you know. I've read so much stories about the Longhorn cows, and I got the opinion there wasn't anything but scrub cattle. But later on I learned that some of them get to be 1,600-1,800 pound steers.
Uh-huh.
Now that might be after there was bred up a little bit, I don't know. I think any animal, it depends on the food he gets as to how he grows. And
yeah. Well, now these Florida ponies and the old Florida cows, they wouldn't, you'd have to breed them up.
Yeah.
You could feed them everything you had and they still wouldn't be big.
That's right. But they would make a living where these bred up cattle starve to death.
Yeah.
They go. I've seen them out in that lake where just the backs would be out feeding on. We have what's called maiden cane that grows in the water flag.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they ate a portion of that old coontail moss, I call it.
That old maiden cane, is that got much nourishment to it?
It must have. If the cow gets something, they stay fat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now that'll get up high too, where it's tough.
Yeah, yeah. But if they've used any regular, you see, they keep it bit off where they get the young, turn the shoots that are coming on up.
Yeah.
And, but I have seen it, a foot, maybe over a foot, sticking out the water. Well, when it gets up and gets its full growth, as you say, it gets tough, then they won't eat.
They won't. They just go on
and find something else. Yeah. And go down there and get a half old dog or get your cow whip and pop it. And it'll come out, especially in calving time when it got when they have young calves, they don't take them out. They go out, leave the calves out on the edge.
They don't bring the calves out.
They don't kill the calves out in the lake.
Yeah.
They leave them on the edge.
Yeah.
Then they go out and feed, and I reckon come out dinner time and let the calves suck, and then they go back.
Well, that's new to me. I didn't know that cattle ever went out in the lake to feed.
You don't see these today cattle going out much. Now, some of mine will go out ways, but they don't go out as far as those old native cows.
Mm-hmm. But you haven't got any old native cows left.
We got some scrubs. If you want to see it that way.
You know, they might used to make the remark, I guess, that in the spring of the year when you hear the whippoorwills calling, Mama would always say, well, the old cows are out. She'd always say, when you hear the whippoorwills start calling in the spring, she'd say, well, the old cows are out of danger. I think that was an old-time expression, that the grass was beginning to come out.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, in those days, I don't think they fed the cattle very much.
Yeah. They just got through the winter the best they could.
With what little feed that they probably could grow from.
Yeah.
But, like Chuck said, that those one-horse farms, they couldn't grow very much feed.
And they didn't have any of that cottonseed meal to rub up and down the back.
No, I thought about that a while ago. We'd plant a row, plant your corn in 7-8 foot rows, and plant a row of velvet beans in the middle. Well, most of the farmer didn't like to do that because come time to gather, you're getting those velvet bean vines, and you had one job of getting your corn out. And later we started planting enough for us to leave a field, just turn the cattle in there and let them gather beans. Velvet beans is a real good cow feed.
Mm-hmm.
And they eat hulls and all, you know. And it doesn't take 2 men to fill one up.
How long will that last after they get them in there?
Oh, you could put them in there and, well, we'll say August. Most everybody's through gathering corn back then. Then in the last of August, put them in there and it lasts until Christmas after.
Oh, that much?
And
that
if you can get an old cow good and fat, she can go through the winter with a mighty little bit of food.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
But you take a poor one to start off with, he's got to have a certain amount of food to keep on going.
On this little, what you started to say a while ago about between Williston and Dunellen.
Oh, about the hog bit.
Yeah.
When I first took over the channel, I was buying all the hogs I could and to get a start in there. And I always wanted me a guinea hog. Well, we had a fella living up there on a little place, and he finally got a hold of a guinea gilt. And I was talking to him one day, and I said, I want me some hogs like that. He says, well, my brother-in-law's got a bunch of them down there, and he says, I'm satisfied he was selling some of them. I said, all right. And then we talked to him a while. I had a barrel that was ready to kill. It was a good bit larger than his gilt. I said, what you going to do with that gilt? He says, I'm going to kill and eat. I said, let me trade you a barrel for. I said, all right. So we traded, and then I got him to go down with me to get these hogs. And drove down it. It was one barrel for off the highway. Went back down to this old fellow's. Very polite. And he had almost a new tractor sitting on the shed and a new pickup. A house and a yard full of children. He had wooden shutters to his windows, and when he walked up to the house, there were no steps. And you step from the ground up in the house, and he had a pump deep well pump. I guess 75 yards from the house. He had a little gasoline in it, and he pumped water for the stump. But he toted water from that pump to the house to use for cooking, bathing, I reckon. Anyway, he called his hogs up, and I bought three. I don't remember exactly. It was right close to $100 for the three and a half. And got two of them in the truck. And I looked around, his wife was there, petting them and rubbing them. And the names was Williams. I said, Ms. Williams, you don't want to sell the hogs or get rid of them? If you don't, I don't have to buy them. She said, oh, yeah. Says, we got to sell them. Says, we got to make a payment on that tractor. So she says, I just love them. And they were just as pretty as they could be.
Yeah.
And it was real cold. And I made some remark about the weather. The old fellow says, well, I don't reckon the good Lord will put more on us than we can bear. That's an expression I never heard before. But I didn't have any luck with those hogs. The last one I had them, they were gentle as dogs. And every time I'd go up in the hammock, I'd take some feed. And if they could hear me, they'd come to me. If they couldn't, I could hog call a time or two, and here they'd come.
Yeah.
I think she had seven pigs, and she lost them down to two or three. And this George Meyer that runs this red and white store,
yeah,
he was new here. And we were trading a little bit with him. And I'll get him and Stuart fishing once or twice. Then come hunting season, he asked if he could go up there and shoot some squirrel. And I said, yeah, just be careful about the stock. And he had heard some of us talk about shooting wild hogs, you know. He went up then. I don't remember how many squirrels he killed. First time he come out, though, he stopped out there and some hollered and he said, come here, I got you some. Went out there and he had an old poor sheep possum. Man, I don't want that thing. And I said, take it on down the road and throw it away, I'll take it to town and give it to a nigger. So he came back again, and that time he come back and hollered, I got you some. Went out there and was McGinnis out. I said, God Almighty, that's the last one I had. He said, well, I thought she was wild. Said she run up like she was going to attack me. She just wanted you to give her something to eat. So that was the end of that. But he said, whatever you say, I'll do whatever you say. Right out the book. I don't know where he can replace it. Just get me another hog. He said, I don't know nothing about buying hogs. Mr. Hannah down there, he has some Duroc. He said, go down there and pick you out one and I'll pay him for it.
Joe Hannah?
No.
What
was his name?
Yes, I know.
You know, it lives down off the other side of the room.
Yeah.
I went down there and picked him out one and it cost him $40. Then I had the two gilts and a great big old D-Rock sow. Somehow they got over in Elma Hudson Pass. He went up there one day and he'd heard us talking about catching wild hogs and shooting them and all. Darn if he didn't shoot them two gilts. And he brought them by here. I wouldn't have known anything about it and I told him. And I went and looked at him. And God Almighty, as good as last of my guinea hog. He said, well, what you want, how much you want for them? You want to butcher me or what do you want to do? And I said, no, just take them on and weigh them and give me market price for them. And that cost him $40. They were small, but.
Well, what was the virtue of a guinea hog?
Well, my way of thinking is they'll fatten on a whole lot less feed than other hogs, isn't it? If you ever get one, generally he'll stay gentle. They're not.
Oh.
They don't get skittish like the other hogs. You can take a pretty gentle sow and put up in that hammock. If she don't see a person more than once a month or once every 2 months, pretty soon she'll get go wild or half wild.
Yeah. Oh, and then if you come go up there and call her, she won't come.
No, she won't come. And you can have them good and gentle, and when they can start falling and they get plenty to eat, they don't know. You can ride up to them, but they won't come to you. They're so full to lay. They don't want to do nothing much but lay down. I've been up there and riding a bunch of them and throw out corn. They might eat a grain or two of it, then go off to them and lay down.
They'd rather have acorns.
Yeah. And they'll get just as fat on those things as they will in a peanut field, a corn field, anything else.
Yeah.
And you butcher one and dry it, lard, it's just as firm as it can be. You know.
Now you can tell by when you eat them what they've been fattened on.
No, I've heard people say that, but I can't.
Can't you?
No, I sure can't. If there's any difference, I'd prefer the Aiken fat hog. Aiken hog is fattened on Aiken. But a whole lot of people say, oh, you can smell it, you can tell it. But I never could. Now if you make a mistake and butcher an old bullhog, you got your tell it. No, I never did butcher any of those.
Just sell them.
Yeah. Castrate them and put them in, let them run out there. I had an experience one time. I had this nigger out here. And it was a big barrel that I wanted to catch. We was up there one day, horseback. And the dog struck a trail. And I said, I bet you that's that big barrel. Well, unless you got off a fast dog, sometime it takes them 5 minutes to get up to this hog and bay him up. And I believe that hog went on 2.5 or 3 miles.
Yeah. You're doing something to it.
Finally, the dog's baited up and I caught it. Well, they caught him and they had him chewed all up, his ears, and I had one, didn't care where he caught. So I said, well, it was a little old bullhog, probably weighed 75 pounds. And I told him, nigga, I said, you want him for a dime? He said, no, so I don't want him. So I got out in there and castrated and just let him go. And next year I caught that hog and he had healed up and he was top.
Oh.
I didn't have no idea to live. That's the reason I told him I'd sell it to him for a dime.
But now you had hogs all along.
We were here even before I got to hammock. We'd raise our own meat, have old side, and some years you'd raise one little pig, and some years you could get two.
Yeah.
And depend on how what good care you took of them.
Well, now, how did you take care of them when you let them run?
Out in the woods, grew up there once a week, or once every 2 weeks, throw them a little corn. See, they root and find worms or something on the edge of the prairie and in the hammock. Then when the acorns come on, right up there, no sow finds pig, try to get us somewhere and catch all the pigs and mark them.
Oh, yeah.
And castrate the males. And
yeah.
Then when they get fat, they're ready to eat.
Well, years back, we had open range during the time my daddy lived, and when Chuck and I were first married, you see the hogs, you marked your hogs.
Yeah.
So each person could tell their hog. Even so, sometimes some of your distant neighbors would pick up one.
Yeah.
But that's the way each one told their hogs from one another's hogs, and they rambled all over the vicinity. But they were gentle, and they would come back home.
My dad-in-law's mark was the, some people called it, but I called it crop up and under bit in each ear. And then when I started raising hogs, I just put a split in one there for a distinction between his and mine.
Uh-huh.
Lord, people used to have it. Most different kind of marks. As you ever seen, some of them make a sharp in one ear and on the bit or something. Yeah. The old man Zetro, yeah, he had a peculiar mark. It was a crop in a finger, or a, what did you call it? No, I don't know. Anywhere you cut out the only part of the ear, left a little finger sticking up, but cut out the upper and under part. That finger stood up there like that.
Yeah.
Nigga said, see that finger?
Yeah.
Says everyone I'm pointing right towards the jail. He meant if you'd been fooling with me now.
In
1939,
Chuck had Good Many Hall.
In 1939?
And Mr. R.H. May rented Feaster from the old man John Feaster and had Watermelon Field over there. And Chuck's hog started going inland. You see, it was open range then and around where it was, so Mr. May told him about it. So Chuck penned him up and was gathering his corn down on our field down on the lake. He and my son, he was 16 years old then. And my girls were visiting Chuck's sister, and my mother was down the east coast with my sister. So we three were here alone, and Chuck was going to get some colored men to go help him break the corn the following Monday morning. But he wanted to go down on Saturday morning and try to break some to get the field broken so he could get his hog shut up. And I was fixing our cooking collard greens.
Oh, that field of the corn had a fence around it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I'd gone down to the smokehouse to get meat. You know how I meet in the smokehouse. And I heard the horses running back to the house. Just as far as they could run. And I knew the minute I heard the horses running that he, along with Robert one, had been bitten by a snake. And they run the horses on up to the lot here, and I started running to them, and I said, which one of you are bitten by a snake? And Tuck said, I am. Well, I thought it was Lana Trollett all the time. Never had any eye, it was Tuck. So Tuck come on to the house, and Lana Trollett hits the horses to the fence down there, and we had a Ford station wagon then, and of all times, it was practically new. It wouldn't stop. We had an old Model T truck, so my boy cranked it and pushed the station wagon. And we started on the Micanopy. First thought was get to Dr. Daly. Well, Dr. Daly, that was young Dr. Daly's father, had a practice in Micanopy. And I went in there and told him what had happened. And he said, well, I haven't got a thing in the world to do anything for him here. Said, you take him on to the hospital, and I'll call and have them have everything ready for him. Well, Tuck had slashed his leg and had a cord or a tourniquet on it, but he had slashed it wrong, and we should have released the tourniquet, but we were ignorant to it. And we went on up to the hospital. I had never been to the hospital. None of us had ever been sick or anything. I didn't even know to take him to the emergency entrance. And he started to walk in the hospital, and having that leg tied, he almost fell. But on the way up, I was driving fast. And there was hardly any traffic on the road in those days. And I remember Tuck telling me to slow down. If he had to die, he'd rather die by being bitten by the snake from getting in the car. Well, he had a terrible time. And we had the hog still shot up in the pen.
Yeah.
And my oldest sister, the old maid's sister, come in and stayed with my mother and my son and my girls. They come home. And I stayed in Gainesville at Billy Gibson's, you know, where I could be at the hospital with him. And during the night, well, there was a man clear around to the edge of Micanopy there, close to Tuscarora. Dogs come here in the night and went in the pen and killed Tuck's dog. And my sister and my boy heard the noise, and they went up there. And it was sister that shot the dog, wasn't it, Tuck?
Yeah.
And you know what the man had the nerve to tell her? That he didn't want his dog to.
It would have been different, you know, if it had been out on the range or been in some distance or something, but they were in the pen up there.
And they just killed the hog.
Well, I didn't know a dog would do that.
Yeah. They used to have what they call catch dogs, old bulldogs or mixed dogs. And,
yeah.
And if they ever got a taste of blood, why, they just keep on till they kill one of the head. One time, I reckon if I'd listened to my wife, I'd have been better off. But I was bullheaded, and I want to get that corn out so I can get my hogs in there. I told Lawrence we'd go down and make a start. And we did.
Something just came to tell me that morning.
Now, when you were breaking corn and things like that, you had to be pretty particular, didn't you?
No. I never was.
Never was?
And after that, I never was. My dad-in-law told me a dozen times I reckon I was going to get snake bit.
Yeah.
But he looked for them all the time, and he was finding them too.
Yeah.
I never did look for them.
And now, by snake bit, you mean a rattlesnake?
Mm-hmm. In the, when you get ready to gather corn, a lot of times you have weeds in your field. And I had a big habit of taking my foot and knocking the weeds off from the corn where I can get to it.
Yeah.
And I reckon one of those weeds must have touched that snake or something. And I had on a pair of old officer's boots. It was made out of soft leather, but it had wrinkled around my ankle.
Uh-huh.
And he just hit me above that boot.
Yeah.
And
well, how did you slash it wrong?
And you're supposed to cut it like that and down like that.
Yeah.
And I just made a cross. I didn't know. I don't think it makes a lot of difference. It didn't bleed none to the mountain, anything anywhere.
Yeah.
And I had a window sash cord on a horse. One horse for a bridle rein.
Well, you didn't lose your leg.
No. And I put a tourniquet around it. And you're supposed to leave those on 2 or 3 minutes and take it off a little bit. I didn't know anything about it. And the old folks had said, you know, if you drink whiskey or something, or chew a whole lot of old strong tobacco or something, which is the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
I had about that deep in a pint of whiskey, and I run in here and just drink it every bit right down.
Yeah.
And it didn't have no more effect on me than that much water.
You mean when the snake bit you?
And the only effect I could feel is your lips would feel dry.
Yeah.
And a cigarette didn't have no taste to it. But I think we timed it, and I was in the hospital. Had the shots in about 47 minutes, I believe. From the time I left the house till we got on up then.
Oh.
And
you had to put a suction pump on.
Give you one shot up that way, and one down that way, and one that way, and one that way.
Yeah.
And boy, in just a little while, you're sure not sick.
Yeah.
Makes you noisy.
Yeah.
And your bowels and your kidneys move. And the worst sense you ever smell. And my legs swelled up so large. Large out. Dr. Snow was supposed to be my doctor. And he was operating, and young Dr. Dale come in and give me the shot. Well, that thing got so sore where they put that suction on it, like I couldn't even stand for the bedclothes to touch it. And the next morning, Dr. Snow and Dale come in there. And Dale looked at it. He said, Snow, I believe if it was my patient, I'd put that suction back on there. Well, I made up my mind right then. And I didn't say anything when he left, and Dr. Snow stayed in there. And I said, now if you think it's absolutely necessary to put that suction back on there, okay, but that thing's so I can't stand for the bed close to touch. He says, well, we're not going to do it right now. He went off in a couple of hours and come back, and they put it in ice. You know, if there isn't anything wrong with you, put your hand or something in the ice, you're not going to let it stay there, no. I couldn't feel that ice, and it swelled up to my hip. And I think the worst thing Doc was afraid of then was blood poisoning. But his state swelled up. I don't know just how long. But I never did like to stay in the hospital. That was my first. No, but I was hoping it'd be his last. So the day he told me that I could go, we had talked about it, and I told my sister-in-law lived right there in town. I could go there and stay at her house. And if I needed him, it'd be handy, you know. And they would make house calls then, anywhere in town. If you could hit them right, they'd come out to your house. And now, then he told me I could go. Well, he told me what to do and everything. Just we got ready to go and started to call the ambulance. And I stayed with my leg about in that shape. And I couldn't walk. And my hands let it hang down. It seemed like it was coming off. But anyhow, I moved. But just before we got ready to leave the hospital, it started raining. And I said, let's call the ambulance and tell them to wait till it stops raining. I said, I ain't going to get wet, call. They come on getting around there. And I got along pretty good. My brother-in-law, he got kind of puny. That's Lillian Gibson's husband, Bob Gibson. And he was staying around in the room with me. He'd lay down a while and get up a while. Finally, one day, I decided I want to get out of that house. I said, Bob, do you feel like going downtown? He said, yeah, I'm going to the store after a little bit. Anyway, I said, go get me a pair of crutches, because I'm going to get out of this bed. And the doctor told me to work my leg, you know, and try to keep working. Well, I was lazy or something and didn't try it. I got up on the side of the bed and got them crutches, and I made two hops on that leg straight. I got the weight on it. I hopped back to that bed.
Yeah.
And I stayed, and then I started doing what the doctor told me.
Yeah.
And working it. And I think 3 days after that, I made it out to the front porch. I had old long settee out there where I could lay down. But it was 2 months before I could look like I could go down at night and swell up the next day.
Yeah. 2 months before you could break your collar?
No, 2 months before I could walk on my leg. I never did break that. The niggas. Boys got that out.
Yeah.
No, I went down on the East Coast. And I could sit up and do anything with my hands that I didn't have to walk around and do. I went down there and stayed a couple of weeks.
So you just couldn't go along like nothing had happened?
No, sir. No.
Not with that rat snake.
Dan's got him some new pieces in. I think he's giving him a little trouble.
Yeah.
Them inside glasses. I couldn't go along.
Reading glasses?
No, not bifocals.
Contact.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Takes a while to get used to them.
I don't think I'd ever get used to them.
Oh, yes, I think
you
will.
Who said it? What did you say?
Tonight.
Start raining. It'll be cloudy this morning, fair up in the middle of the day, and it's going to get some rain tonight. And it'll be fair and turning cooler tomorrow. I believe that's the way I understood it.
Yeah.
I don't like to drive in the rain, so.
Oh, you didn't get your groceries?
Oh, yes. I was on town, bought groceries.
Yeah, you went on town. Yeah. You hadn't been in a week or two.
She wants a new chair.
You know,
I reckon a couple of years ago, maybe last year, I had a bed and this old mattress, I don't know how old it was, but it just suited me. And the doctor made me elevate the front of my top of my head of my bed.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling my sleep down here.
Yeah.
So she just had to buy me a new mattress. I said, I don't want it. And anyhow, she went on and she bought her one. And she's got one of these old-fashioned wooden beds. and never thought to measure it before she bought the mattress.
Yeah.
She got in, was too long for her bed. So she finally put it on mine. And then we had no just a straight antenna up on our kitchen, and she wanted one of the rotary ones.
Yeah.
Well, that's weak now. It's getting pretty fair reception with that old one. And the wind had blown that old thing with rock back and forth. And
yeah.
One day it was pretty calm, and all at once we heard a crash. I said, now you're getting your antenna.
You like it?
Yeah, I don't see much difference in it. Well, you can get different channels better, but we don't get anything much but 2 and 4.
What was that you had on your mind the other night about the niggers when you walked out of the house over there? I remember you said you had something to say about that.
Remember
Dora Gooden?
Oh, that was when I was down home just a year then.
Yeah. Oh, way back then.
Yeah, I told you about my daddy planting so much cotton.
Yeah.
I never have liked cotton since then. First year he planted 25 acres. Next year he planted 15 acres. The next year he planted 10 acres.
Yeah.
And the best I can remember, as he cut down his acreage, he put a little bit more fertilizer.
Yeah.
And he made the same amount. Well, cotton started going up just a little bit. Then he moved over to Redick and planted 10 acres of, 6 acres of sugarcane, 40 acres of cabbage. Well, he and I, we had 4 acres in one field, but my dad and me didn't have but 20 acres. These old big flat Dutch cabbage that make tremendous head. And they had a contract. Fellow would buy them for so much up until a certain time. Well, we didn't get the 3 or 4 carloads in on the contract, and then they wasn't no good. Well, they just built a new ice plant that ready, and fella that he is sharecropping with, he said, let's cut 5 or 6 carloads of those cabbage and put them down there on cold storage. And maybe in 2 or 3 days, the market will go up and we'll take them out and box them up and ship them. All right. We kid them down and the market never did come up. Within about 6 weeks, those cabbage were ripe, rotten. We had to go down and get those things out of that place and load them in a wagon, haul them out to City Limit.
Yeah.
You talk about something. That was a job. And then when that cane got ready, we had a great big meal, but it was run by horsepower. And we'd get off 2 strikes and put on a 3rd one and skim it. And the next day we'd get off 3. And it'd take about 2 hours and a half, maybe 3 hours to grind us enough juice. Had a big, large vat. And that was from 4 days till after night. The school kids come up in the afternoon, you know, to get juice. And, oh, they was having the biggest kind of time when I was having to work. I was about 17 years old then. I didn't like that a bit.
Now that was before day till after night.
Yeah. And it lasted about 6 weeks.
I didn't know it'd take that long to grind the juice.
Oh, yeah. Now, if you got a power mill.
Oh, I see.
You saw this little one horse outfit over here, this old nigger.
Yeah.
And
that just took one can.
Yeah, you didn't have to. And you didn't have to have. Let's see, we cooked 150 gallons of juice at the time. We had over 50-gallon barrels, and it takes 3 of them to make what they call a strike. And Lord, it took, that seemed like it'd take forever.
And all your friends come up there drinking juice?
Drinking juice, free, you know, free juice.
I never drank that, so I don't have a taste for it. You like it?
Yes, I do. I really like it. And I know my daddy and my dad-in-law, both of them, most always, it's old-fashioned remedy, you know, but it get that juice in the bottle till they got all the skimmings off, and then get them about a pint and drink it. It acted as a purgative medicine. And they said it did good. I don't know whether it did or not. I never did drink any of it. We should take those skimmings and put them in a barrel. Some people put some meal in there and some never did. Let that ferment and work off. Then you take it and distill it and make it whiskey. And I never did like cane skimming whiskey because it had a different taste from any I would taste. But later years, and I got, some of them wouldn't have nothing but a lard can and a little old galvanized pipe to make it with. Old farmer'd grind his cane and get skimming milk. He'd probably have two or three of them. Some of them maybe 5 gallons of whiskey, and they'd set it back to take a little drink whenever they got ready.
Yes. Well, now that way you didn't have to pay all this big tax on it.
No. And shoot, I know any time you could buy a gallon of moonshine whiskey for a couple of dollars. But the biggest job was getting a hold of them the couple of dollars. Money was so scarce, you know.
That's right.
I bought a mini pint of whiskey out here from a bootlegger for 50 cents.
Yeah. Well, now, some of it you buy from bootlegger is better than others.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Well, now, how do you manage that?
Yeah. Well, if you get bad on a whole lot more often than you get good ones.
Yeah.
There was two boys and their old daddy, the Rollinsons. And they live out on the Rochelle Road. And they made it on a copper still. And they double run it. And filtered through charcoal. Now that was, if I was drinking, and I could get that kind of whiskey, I'd never buy a drop of this red stuff. Because it was good. You could drink all you want tonight and wake up in the morning, your head would be just as clear.
Well, now how did you get that?
They made it and sold it. It's the last when everything started going up a little bit. They'd let you sell you a gallon for $9. But it was good.
Yeah. How late was that? Now, World War II?
Yeah. 25 years ago, I imagine.
Yeah.
Rollison.
Rollison.
Yeah.
Rollison.
There's three of those boys. Clark was the youngest. He never did take much to do with till later years, and then he tried to make a little bit. But Raymond and Harmon, they were both of them in the Navy, and they came out and they didn't want to work much. So they'd trap and sing for fish and hunt alligators and make moonshine. And well, it was legal then to hunt alligators, but it wasn't legal to sing and trap fish. An old man Rollins said one day, he says, you know, he says, when it gets legal, he says, those boys will stop. They won't do anything unless it's illegal.
Now, where was their headquarters, over on the other side of town?
Yeah, between Micanopy and Rochelle.
Oh, over there.
Mm. You know where that cemetery is out
there? Yeah.
Just across the road up a little ways from it.
Well, now they were out in the woods then.
Yeah. They were out in the woods.
Yeah.
I never did get any bad one from them.
Yeah.
It was really good. They could make it any proof you wanted.
Oh, could they?
Yeah. They had a test and they could make it any proof you wanted.
Yeah.
It was just but how much Indian blood do you think they had in the Rollison? It originally came from Chrisman, Florida. If you know where that is, it's just a wide place. It used to be just a wide place in the road between Orland and Indian River City. It used to be a road we went across. They came from down there, and I think that's about all they did down there was hunt and fish. But the old man, he was, and this youngest boy, they were real good farmers. They grew watermelons and sweet potatoes. They never did go in much for this other kind of truck, string beans, lettuce, and cucumbers, and things like that. And they were good people.
What sort of living quarters did they have over there?
Just an ordinary country home. Eventually, Clark built him. He built him a nice little home out there.
Well, what do you mean when you say that's an ordinary little country home?
Just didn't have any modern conveniences. And I think eventually they did get running water and lights. But when it first started off, where they had, I believe it was a shallow well pump. And old man Rollison could make as good a syrup as my dad-in-law could, and I think he made the best.
Yeah.
He really made good syrup.
Well, now, it not being, he contributed to the community, didn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. It'd be nice to live in his, live
back
around
from
him.
Yeah. Let's see, it was three girls. Good girl.
Now that's the end of Channel One Right. That's the end of Channel One Right this Saturday afternoon, the 4th, 5th, what is it?
4th.
4th of April, 1970. That's the end of Channel One Right. It's rainy Saturday afternoon. The end of Channel One Right this rainy Saturday afternoon, 4th of April, 1970. Mm-hmm.